podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome along to another live episode of Red Tinted Glasses, and it's Monday afternoon. We're coming to you slightly earlier than usual due to a change in both our schedules this evening, but it does mean that Callum is back on the show. Just a few things to talk about today, Callum. Welcome back.
Thank you. Is it working? You can hear me, Glenn, just to confirm after the last time we tried to do this.
Yes, can still hear you, can still see you for those that are tuning in on YouTube as well. So all systems seem to be go. Morning to Mark Robertson, of course, joining us from America. Good evening, I suppose, to any of our Australian followers tuning into this episode as well. Callum, circuses tend to last longer when they come down the beach. But it's the other side of Broadhill we see the circuses, not at AB24. But Neil Warnock's reign as Aberdeen manager did come to an end after 33 days in charge. $250,000 was the rumoured figure he was supposed to be getting. I think slightly less now that he's departed earlier than predicted. But he does go out after guiding the Dons to Hampden, a weekend victory over Kilmarnock, seeing the Dons return for another semi-final this season. Lots to chat about. We'll go over that game at the weekend. Season ticket prices, because I know you're a man that has plenty to say on season tickets. And of course, the club have finally broken their silence on Neil Warnock's departure as well. We'll discuss the statement released this morning from the club. And still on the pitch, we'll go back to discussing the midweek trip to Dens Park. So lots to get through. Bet you're glad you've come back for this one, Callum.
Yeah, I just hope the internet holds up, because otherwise you could just be ranting for another hour. But this time more probably about off-the-field matters rather than on the field. So at least there's that.
Yeah, I know. Well, there's, once again, lots to talk about, and quite ironic that if your internet's unstable, it very much describes the goings-on at Pittodrie as well. So we've got a lot to cram into the show today. Where do you want to start, first of all?
I suppose the very odd news that sort of ruined, well, not ruined my good mood, but just confused me on Saturday. Neil Warnock resigning. Very odd, very bizarre, I felt like, and unexpected. And then a meltdown ensued on BBC Radio Scotland.
Yeah, Michael Stewart in particular seeming to really struggle to come to terms with the news that an interim manager was only interim. And yeah, the West Coast media in particular loving life for the fact that we were particularly struggling, I guess, as fans to kind of come to terms with the news as well. And I think, interestingly enough, I guess the news of Warnock's departure really overshadowed what was on the pitch encouraging performance and an excellent result as well, when I think most of us will have probably gone in with hope rather than expectation going into the game at the weekend. But slight surprise given Warnock's departure. It seemed to be discussed with the club regardless of victory on Saturday that Neil would have departed the club. It was decided to the players and staff on Thursday that this decision was coming. So I'm glad that he's gone out on a high in terms of taking us back to Hampden. But, you know, he also delivered a few home truths in his final post-match press conference, speaking about the fact that the club need to get recruitment correct. And without doing that, we're going to struggle. We've got the right infrastructure to be challenging the top two. You know, some people say he chucked it because he wasn't getting the results in the league. But, you know, he certainly seemed to indicate an imminent arrival for a new manager, but very much contradicts what the club have come out with this morning anyway.
Yeah, if I'm honest, I'm still a little bit confused about the whole Neil Warnock thing. And I also realised this morning, I feel sorry for Junior Hoylett having come in to work with Neil Warnock, and then he's gone after a month. But yeah, I certainly got the impression, if I messaged you after the statement came out, thinking, oh, maybe we'll hear rumours or the press will get wind of actual names come sort of Monday. And then I was hoping maybe the new manager will be in the stands on Wednesday against Dundee. However, no. Warnock sort of suggested it seemed like that we were it was going to be more imminent. And then the statement, the fact we were in advanced talks, also then sort of got my hopes up a little bit. But then the statement coming out today saying that'll be the international break. So very, very bizarre. Peter leaving back in the dugout. And by the end of the season, we'll have had four different managers in the dugout, essentially. two under permanent and then two sort of interims.
That we know of.
Yes, that's true. Unless it goes really, really tits up in the split. But it's, you know, that just points towards the fact that clearly the club aren't being run correctly at the moment, because nobody, unless you're Watford, should be going through that many managers in a season.
Yeah, no, are we just the Scottish Watford now? And I did see someone say, would we become the first team to potentially win the Scottish Cup having been managed by three different managers from the start of the competition to the end? So something to keep an eye on between now and then. And of course, you know, we want to be speaking about matters on the pitch, Callum, but this club right now seems to be giving us more to talk about off the pitch rather than on it. And I think, you know, the departure of Neil Warnock coupled with what he said versus what the club said just kind of further, you know, backs up that we're a complete shambles off the pitch right now. And by all accounts, to quote the club statement, the holistic review of our football operation has been near enough completed, and the audit's been reviewed with the guy that's done it and the board of directors, and they've identified three key areas to, and I quote, substantially enhance our current setup. The first being certain structural changes within the football setup. Mm. For me, that kind of seems to indicate maybe more of a academy first team look. Second, and most glaringly obvious to the fans, it doesn't really need to take a, you know, recruitment consultant or whatever they're calling them to work out. We need to recruit a new first team manager, and the addition of a new technical director to support the director of football. I can see your hands in there. You want to jump in there?
What's the difference between a technical director and a director of football? And I swear half these job titles we hear these days didn't exist like 5 years ago. And now we're getting this. And surely the fact we're getting in a technical director suggests the model or the current director of football isn't working, in which case, are we replacing him? Or are we not? Probably not. It's very, very, very odd. And it could almost be a case of too many cooks spoil the broth, you almost sort of feel like, as well, especially if some of them aren't very good at their jobs, which would be a concern, really, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and Barry Reid points out that the club report points out we need a technical director. This will surely just add on more time with a managerial appointment. And again, we're doing things completely wrong, because we're going to appoint a manager in the next 2 weeks who is going to have to work or report to, again, going by what the club have come out, he will report to the technical director and the director of football, which currently and looks like is set to remain as Stephen Gunn. What manager wants to come in and not know who they are directly reporting to? That just seems madness. You would surely appoint the technical director first before you then appoint the manager. Probably, no wonder Warnock's gone, fuck this. He's probably seen kind of the structure and goes, well, I don't want to be part of that.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, there are a lot of sort of theories about why Neil Warnock left. And to be honest, I'm none the wiser. And I don't know, maybe we've been unfair to Stephen Gunn. Maybe there is just too much on his plate, and that's the need for the technical director. But I don't really know what the difference between the two roles really are. I hope it'll all come clear. But with the way things have gone in the last few years, there's sort of no indication to suggest that would be the case, that it will be clear to all of us. But I guess regardless, let's hope it works out, because we can't afford for the next managing appointment to go tits up. Because the last four, I guess, now really have. So they really, we've said this the past few times, they really need to get this one right. And I suppose it is encouraging that they've actually taken someone with experience of doing these kind of reviews and looking at improvements as well. So there's credit for that. But at the same time, with this statement, I'm still a little bit confused about what the hell's going on.
Yeah, it's really not kind of clear, kind of the structure, and it won't be clear to a lot of us. In terms of the guy that actually did the whole review, for those of you on Twitter more specifically, check out the thread that football commentator Derek Ray has done on the guy himself. He's obviously had a lot of experience working in German football, German hockey as well, and he's kind of spoke about the transformation that he helped provide to Hoffenheim. I think he was kind of involved in discovering Julian Nagelsmann. If he discovers the next Julian Nagelsmann for Aberdeen, then we're totally laughing. But what manager wants to come in under a premise of having to work for somebody, or who's coming in that technical director role and be like, well, I don't want him as manager. Kind of the two don't add up. I think, as many people are pointing out, Johnny Main here saying that we'll probably have a new manager before the tech director is appointed, which is arse about face. And yeah, it's just back to front way of Dave Cormack's world, and we're all just living in it right now. But for me, in terms of a technical director, the technical director needs to be somebody with footballing knowledge and needs to understand probably the Scottish game, as well as maybe the wider European market as well, in terms of when it comes to scouting. But probably most importantly, cannot be a yes man to Dave Cormack, which we all believe Stephen Gunn to be. And again, this is a role in a roundabout way, maybe not the title that we would have given it, a role that us as fans could see somebody with footballing know-how, an understanding of the game to come in and assist Stephen Gunn.
Yeah.
But yet we've got him reporting to Stephen Gunn. So someone that will be experienced and should know the game is going to have to report to somebody who has basically learned on the job. And, well, certainly Neil Warnock was very scathing about the recruitment and how much Stephen Gunn is involved in that. Obviously, kind of remains to be seen a little bit. I know questions should maybe be directed more at the head of recruitment or on that, but obviously Stephen and the rest of the board sign off on these players.
Yeah, I mean, the fact, just since we were talking about the review and their German background, it sort of just reminded me of something I read, I think it was yesterday, about Mark Fotheringham, about how he's worked under Felix McGath, and he reckons he's got, you know, more credentials than... he's worked on the younger Klinsmann as well, I suppose, and he's got more credentials than the last three managers for us, prior to Warnock. So, you know, perhaps we do go down that path if we're sticking down this German route. I'd like it just for the accent changes in the interviews alone. right now, some of the managers we're seeing links, I'm not too keen on really any of them.
No, definitely not. Michael O'Neill seems to be one that is picking up momentum.
And within an Arsenal break, that would make sense as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think slightly guided by the wild WhatsApp rumours of Aberdeen that do the round, on especially on Sunday nights, the fact that allegedly he was not wanting to come in until he'd taken care of the two friendlies that Northern Ireland have got lined up this month, coupled with the fact, of course, he was at Paisley for the recent game against St Mirren, not accounting for the fact that St Mirren currently have two Northern Ireland internationals or players on the periphery of their squad. But such is the world of football, and rumours 2 and 2 becomes 5 very quickly, and things like this gather momentum. The other couple of things, though, that I did take away from that statement, again, one of the key changes Burrow's saying is the priority is the engagement of the first team manager. Just the word choice and engagement really kind of made me laugh, because I would have thought it would have been appointment of the first team manager. We've identified a short list of individuals that meet the criteria agreed by the club and individuals who have also expressed an interest in the job. So again, kind of goes against what Neil Warnock's saying, where he believed the club were kind of further along and deployment was imminent. I've certainly heard from a fairly reliable person about the kind of software that the club use in terms of hiring players, kind of like you and your football manager database, I guess, where you put in a couple of keywords maybe or stuff you're looking for. Anyway, this managerial software produced the HJK Helsinki manager as an ideal candidate for our job. And there was another name, but I've not been told what that other name was, but Cormac said no to both. So interesting to see what the auto computer conjures up for us in that sense. Yeah. But
are we using AI to hire our next manager? Is that what's going on?
Hopefully it goes better than Kensington Palace.
Yes, true. I mean, hopefully, if it goes better than my football manager saves, well, as you referenced, then that would be really quite something. I mean, 2031 and won 4 league titles on the bounce to Aberdeen, so they'd be doing really well.
Might as well chuck your CV in, to be honest.
Exactly. And that'd be a laugh, I'm sure, if people want to still go down that route as we did with Warnock.
Well, again, you know, the club confirming that the interviews will be taking place this week. In some cases, the clubs will be looking to seek permissions for managers currently under contract. Again, that sort of references Michael O'Neill currently under contract with Northern Ireland, of course. I have heard from somebody that has done podcast interviews before with Neil Lennon as well, that the club have spoken to Neil Lennon about the vacant managerial position. You'll have seen the DM that came into our page about that as well. But I have to say, I would be very surprised if the club went down the Lennon route purely due to the divisive nature that appointment would make, unless you believe half the folk PLZ Soccer and Sky Sports managed to interview after the game at the weekend.
Let's not believe them. I don't know. I mean, the fact that Neil Lennon's even been mentioned, we only seem to be getting managers linked with Neil in their name. But we had Neil Warnock, Michael O'Neill, Alex Neil's been chucked around, and Neil Lennon. Make it a point, my dad, if they don't want me, at least.
You just come in as assistant, but yeah.
Exactly.
I forgot to take the filter of Neil off the database search, and that's why all these guys keep coming up. Another thing that's kind of been shoehorned out and kind of overshadowed again by the Warnock news, the victory at the weekend, was the club released season ticket prices on Thursday, Callum. A slight price increase, which again, given the current state of affairs on the pitch, seemed difficult to swallow for some. Fair play to Anna Murison, who emailed the club and actually asked if championship pricing will apply if the situation arises, and the club saying that will be dealt with accordingly. Good to see the ticket officing staff are very much assured that we will remain a Premiership club next season.
Unlikely event. Have they seen the league table? Have they?
Given the price increase, I think it works out actually between 3-5% for most fans, as long as you're renewing or you're certainly same seat. Maybe if you move stand, it could go up slightly more. What was pointed out to me actually last week, though, of course, is the Don's Cash scheme, the kind of cash back you get when you purchase a new top or anything out of the club shop. So if you've got a significant build-up in your Don's Cash account, that could probably counter any price increase you've got onto your season ticket. Something I certainly hadn't considered before I was away to start my rant about a price increase, so I quickly piped down. A couple of key incentives, though, for those certainly with young children. Free under 12 season tickets in the family area only of the upper deck. Regardless of that being just assigned to the one section in the upper deck, great to see the club going out and looking to secure a younger fan base to get them in. Rory certainly threw a tantrum when I said I wasn't taking him at the weekend, so I'm certainly looking up to, you know, certainly get him a first season ticket next season as well. And, you know, just £49 for somewhere like the main stand, I think that's excellent pricing as well. But Callum, you do have a gripe, because student prices once again have not been introduced for next season.
They haven't. And I'm sure there was murmurs that Burrows was going to look to introduce it for this season. I don't know if I've made that up now at this point, Glenn. Do you recall such a thing?
I certainly feel like he said it would be looked into.
Yeah. Clearly, they didn't look into it that much. You know, people will have things to say. You know, students, get a job, whatever. I have a job. Look, I have a job. But unfortunately, university means then I can't work full-time as well. But, you know, you can also say, like, you know, a lot of students will fall into the 18 to 21 category. Not everyone does. Some of us are mature students and are still hampered by the fact that they can't really work full-time alongside university. So I think it's really silly that they don't have that option. Even if it was for certain sections of the ground, they don't need to do it in the main stand. They could just have it in like the south and the, and well, I suppose the red shed, it's probably cheap enough anyway, but in the Richard Donald as well. It's potentially pricing people out when they're, you know, they're not going to be, season ticket sales aren't going to be flying in at the moment, are they? When perhaps that could be an incentive to people, especially when it's such a big university city, two universities, both big sponsors of the club as well. So if they feel like that something could have been worked out with their odd, bizarre, thankfully the increases aren't massive. But, you know, when we're going to Germany this summer as well, you know, I've got to sort of budget very accordingly. So it might be pot noodles and pesto pasta and for the foreseeable, unfortunately.
Yeah, shame you've left Nando's and there's going to be no free chicken for you.
Well, if I stay at my new place, which you will not mention, then... you know, maybe I'll get a discount there, which will help nicely.
Well, you could say every little helps, I suppose, but that's not mentioning any names. the good thing is that the early bird pricing is in effect until the 10th of June, and your current season ticket seat is being held until the end of May. I think it's the week after the Scottish Cup final. So again, for those like ourselves going to Germany or needing to budget, at least the early bird price for me certainly feels longer than last season. And of course the club do have the 6 month and 10 month finance options on your season ticket as well. Although I think the 10 month one does end at the end of April, I want to say. But yeah, at least there's a couple of options. You don't have to pay everything up front.
Yeah, there is that. I do like the fact that they do have those finance options. It just helps spread the cost and makes it a little bit easier, I think, for several people. But student prices, Burrows, come on.
Not happening. Right, we've spoken a lot about off-the-pitch matters then, Callum. Let's speak about on-the-pitch because Scottish Cup semi-final awaits. Positivity beckons, finally. A 3-1 victory over Kilmarnock at the weekend. It was two changes, that's where I was going with that, to the starting lineup as Duke and Jensen dropped out from the disappointing late defeat to St Mirren. Jack McKenzie and Jamie McGrath coming in instead. Thoughts on those changes? And of course, we're back at Hampden, baby.
Fine. Changes were fine. They worked. I don't even know what to do. Didn't even know what to do with myself on Saturday after a win. I was in a good mood and it felt very odd. But I thought, to a man, they were all absolutely excellent. Never mind the two changes. They were all brilliant. Jack McKenzie, very good for me. And I just quite like the fact he's actually putting in decent performances and seems to be improving, because it just reminds me of sort of Andrew Considine, where he came in and everyone's like, man, and then he proved everybody wrong. And I hope the same happens. But I was impressed with him. Killian Phillips as well. I thought the application of him over the weekend was absolutely excellent. And I feel like a lot of the team probably had those comments from Neil Warnock in mind about how we got bullied down there, because we certainly didn't get bullied on Saturday. If anything, we bullied them. However, we've been critical of Graham Shinney previously in the past. My man of the match, absolutely excellent, absolutely everywhere, fighting for every ball, grabbed the goal as well on his weak foot, something that he sometimes barely even stands on too. Obviously had the deflection, but Oh, it was just nice to win. Everyone played well. No complaints from me. And the pie was pretty decent too. So delighted. That really helped my hangover little self as well.
Yeah, no, I actually had a pie as well for the first time this season. £4.10 though, fucking hell.
Like, it's extortionate, yeah, it is extortionate. Even student prices for the pies, guys, come on.
You're not asking for much, but no, the steak pie was really good. Definitely worth the money, but yeah, it did feel robbed at paying £5.50 for a steak pie in a Yorkie, like, but at least on the pitch we had lots of positives to speak about. You mentioned Graham Shinney. We are going to come on to his booking a little bit later on, and obviously that booking does mean that he is now suspended for the semi-final. But another player for me that impressed, and as you said, you feel a bit sorry for, Junior Hoylett. I thought he was exceptional. You mentioned Shinney being your man of the match. The sponsors actually gave Junior the man of the match. Involved in all three goals, as Paul Donaldson says. The only thing I hope we look at between now and certainly Dundee is that we get Junior Hoylett on corners rather than Connor Barron passing it to Graham Shinney and then back again to whip in a ball. Just get someone that actually has a bit of quality about them to whip in balls into the box.
Yeah, certainly. But no, Junior Hoylett as well for me, very exciting. Sort of every time he got the ball, you were, you know, excited about seeing what was going to happen. The nutmeg in the second half was just phenomenal. And I thought he actually linked up with Jack McKenzie really well. Jack McKenzie got up with that left-hand side in support of him quite a lot, and it worked. So if we can see a little bit more of that from Junior Hoylett, I would be delighted. And hopefully that'll cheer him up after his pals left. Probably early to talk about this, Glenn. I know we've got a lot to get through, but I'm going to mention it anyway. If he keeps performing like this, even at his age, would you like to see him next season?
Well, I mean, he's a winger, and we're certainly lacking in that.
A bit of experience as well.
I think it would be, if the wages were right, it would be a deal that would probably suit both parties. For those of you that listen to most of our episodes, will have heard the kind of getting to know you episode we did with Junior Hoylett, and of course the World Cup coming up in 2026, being in Canada as well as America and Mexico. I'm sure Junior's kind of hoping to probably be that last swan song there. So if I guess the deal would have to be right for both parties. I wouldn't want us to be spending too much wages on someone like Junior Hoylett, as you say, given the kind of age and probably lacking in pace. But experience probably going to be a key factor to this team going into next season, and the likelihood of losing some quite influential figures. It would make sense, but it obviously has to work for both parties. So one that I'm sure if performances continued on the same level as we saw against Kilmarnock, I think fans would get on board of. But I guess how is he going to react now that his best mate's not here?
Yeah, true. But if you knew about the news on Saturday and put in that kind of performance, then that's okay. And I suppose also the type of guy with that sort of experience that could be very, very beneficial for the likes of Shaden Morris, should he still be here, Vicente Basaiwin, or any other sort of younger prospective wingers that we might see next season.
Yeah, that's true. You could take the wingers under his wing, quite literally. And look to develop them on. Kevin Blanchard, picking up on the performance and kind of going back to what you mentioned about everyone being up for the battle and the kind of physical element, I thought it was quite interesting listening to Derek McInnes post-match saying that he knew he would kind of be going route one, balls over the top. But I thought we dealt with that a lot better. We spoke about having Killian Phillips in the team when Jay Moyer was on the last episode, giving us that little bit of height in the team, giving us kind of a target rather than just Miovski. And I think that physical battle kind of helped us. And Killy looked really rattled at times with the first goal as well. From a Kilmarnock point of view, we'll be absolutely really disappointed with. Very easy from an Aberdeen point of view. But for me, the first two goals, and obviously more so the third once I saw it back, kind of also was the luck that I've been calling out for us to kind of have. You know, the keeper spills the shot, the deflection that takes it above Will Dennis and goals for Graham Shinney's. We haven't been having that rub of the green in the league. And we benefited from it in the Scottish Cup. If it's going to continue in the Scottish Cup and it sees us lifting the trophy in May, then I'm all here for it. But it just felt that things that hadn't been falling our way did so at the weekend.
Yeah, certainly. But you sort of make your own luck, really, don't you? And true. I think, you know, with the application of everyone sort of involved, things like that, we deserve that rub of the green. I think, well, the deflections played a part in all of the goals, really, I guess. I suppose even at the end, the first one, I think Junior Hoylett shot took a little bit of a nick, which meant it was a bit more difficult for Dennis to deal with before McGrath tapped home. But also, got to give credit for Jamie McGrath for getting up there in support of Bojan and getting involved and getting back amongst the goals as well. And if we can see, we sort of seem to say that every time he pops up with a goal or two, you just want him to keep sort of building that consistency. If he can do that towards the back end of the split and that confidence that he'll get back into the season towards the splits, then that could be a massive help for us. And we're scoring goals that weren't from Bojan Miovski as well. More of that, please. That would be lovely. Although if he wants to get back amongst the goals too, then that would be nice.
Yeah, but he's still playing his part in the goals as well, obviously, especially the first goal as well. Towards the end of the first half, obviously, we concede a really poor goal. Fraser Wallace's quote to me on that still makes me laugh. Nicky Devlin stripped like the willow in terms of giving away the kind of getting twisted inside out as well. Connor Barron and Graham Shinney probably culpable for two players going for the same ball as well. And Neil Warnock must be thinking this Aberdeen team really concede the softest goals going, because I think pretty much every goal we conceded during his time as Aberdeen manager was soft and in most cases avoidable as well. Jack McKenzie kind of bit ball watching, kind of getting distracted, and Danny Armstrong has a tap in. And at that point, Calum, I don't know about you in the South Stand, but it just kind of felt there was a little bit of a nervousness kind of brushed over Pittodrie, and there was like a sense that let's just get into halftime and not only the players but the fans can regroup before going again, because certainly once Kelly scored, I felt there was a real nervousness around the ground.
Yeah, I felt it too, and I'm sort of concerned with how things have gone most of the season, not in recent weeks, but recent weeks especially. Worried that the heads would go down a little bit after conceding that goal, and especially being such a soft goal, and they might have been thinking, oh, here we go again, because that's sort of what I was thinking. But I was very glad to get in at halftime and not concede two on the bounce, a la St Mirren. And I thought they actually responded pretty well in the second half. And the goal, the third goal, certainly came at a good time because, you know, it was, I think, about 66 minutes. And if that goes on into the last sort of 20, 15 minutes where we've only got a one goal lead, that St Mirren game certainly would have probably been creeping back into the players' minds and the fans,
yeah,
so, I suppose.
Yeah, I was just saying, certainly the fans' mind. And I think, yeah, you're absolutely right, because, you know, it was beginning to get to that kind of stage of the game where McInnes was looking to roll the dice and make a couple of changes. And that goal for us just kind of just gave everybody that little bit of breathing space, that little bit of, okay, right, we've got that two-goal cushion back. We can relax a little bit and kind of control the game in terms of our subs and also the pace of the play as well, slowed things down as well. Now, of course, Scottish football and controversial decisions are two things that seem to go hand in hand. And it's another weekend where refereeing decisions are very much at the forefront of attention. Obviously, the decisions that came at Easter Road in particular. But it's fair to say John Beaton was also the victim of a lot of questionable decision-making for our game. In particular, Donnelly for Kilmarnock, how he managed to go through the entire game without a booking is beyond me. I guess the biggest kind of questionable decision was the one where Graham Shinney, right at the end of the game, is absolutely wiped out. No free kick awarded, and Graham Shinney gets booked for dissent in the end. Interesting to hear kind of what your opinion is on Graham Shinney getting himself booked in that, because I think we can all agree that it is a booking, a foul first and foremost, and it should have been given in the first place. But when you are the captain of the side and probably aware himself that any booking gets yourself suspended for a semi-final, should an experienced leader in Graham Chenet have been a bit more restrained in that situation? Easy, of course, for me to say sitting here.
Yeah, I think it's easy for us to say. I mean, the type of game Chenet was involved in as well, I think his sort of tensions were just very high. You know, he was getting involved in a lot of biting the tackles, his goal. And, I mean, 100% free kick.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he doesn't need to go chasing after beating and to get that yellow card. However, also on the flip side, as well as the bad decision originally for not getting the free kick, Graham Chenet is also the captain, so he maybe should have got a bit of leeway there in that he, if anyone has the right to talk to him, he does. But obviously, we don't know what he said.
I think there's a difference, though, Callum, in talking to the ref and shouting in the referee's face.
Well, look, if he wasn't such a shite, then it wouldn't have happened. So there we go. And I feel sorry for Graham Chenet. It could potentially hurt us massively in that semi-final as well. I think he maybe should know a little bit better, but I can certainly understand his frustrations just with sort of throughout the game, some of the refereeing decisions, and also that one in particular, as blatant foul as you see ever, basically.
Yeah, I think, you know, you can see both sides of the coin in the sense that it's, you know, the most blatant foul and that should have been given, but I kind of leaning a little bit more towards that he should have known better, because if we look back to the Bonnie Rigg game where he obviously picked up that booking as well, he got involved needlessly with the Bonnie Rigg number 10, I'm pretty sure it was, and kind of chatting away and lulled himself into a really stupid foul that he probably shouldn't have given away. And again, a little bit of back chat sees him booking, get booked, and those two bookings has now led to a suspension. It's not also the first time that Graham Chenet's now kind of got suspended ahead of a trip to Hampden as well. So disappointing in that sense. From an Aberdeen point of view, but it's just one that I guess we're going to have to learn from moving on.
Yeah, however, I do agree with Paul Dawson's comment. Rangers players did surround the referee and got a Hibs player sent off. I'm sure Connor Goldson went storming in, and I think Lundstrom as well. None of them receiving any repercussions either, maybe because they didn't dare to question the referee. But I mean, it's just inconsistency as well. And obviously, the Hibs player did get a red card, which, I mean, I suppose since I've mentioned it, fucking hell. What chance have Hibs got in that game?
Oh, what chance have Hibs got? What chance the rest of us got? Because I think it's also been pointed out, John Beaton and Stephen McLean, Stephen McLean is actually our referee for Wednesday night's trip to Dens Park, are undoubtedly going to be involved in the semi-finals in some shape or form. In terms of the draw, for me, avoid Rangers purely based off of what we saw from the officiating yesterday. Celtic look as bad as us right now. And thankfully, both teams have no opportunity to improve their standing. So for me, in terms of the Scottish Cup, I would kind of weirdly take Celtic. But yes, I think we have to agree that Morton would be the ideal draw at this stage ahead of tonight's draw. Callum, welcome back. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would agree with that. It's so annoying. It was going so well, and then
it was.
I got booted out.
It was. No, it's all right. It looks seamless in the audio, of course. And some exciting changes for this podcast coming up on audio as well. More of that in a couple of weeks' time. One thing going into the Dundee game, Callum, I spoke about the game against Kilmarnock being season-defining and a win potentially giving us momentum and opportunity to build on that ahead of some quite important games ahead of the international break. Will the weekend's result give those players that bounce going into Wednesday night?
I hope so. It's certainly given me a little bit of a bounce. And you think, you know, the fact they've got another semi-final on the horizon, they'll all want to be competing for places in terms of, you know, in training and in matches. People want to prove themselves, deserve, show why they deserve that chance in the semi-final. And I think it just gives everyone a bit of a lift. I mean, the atmosphere at Petardi, although it was a smaller crowd, I thought was absolutely excellent on Saturday. The Red Shed looked like it had sort of more involvement, sort of out with the sort of centre block. The South Stand were a bit more up for it. Obviously, winning helps, certainly. But it felt like it gave us a lift. And I think the players getting that reception back as well could give them a lift. And it's something, you know, a little bit of a distraction from our terrible league form, and they can take confidence from that performance. A side that we've not done well against in the league, we bullied them, a very convincing and deserved victory. Why not try and carry that on into the league? And you just hope that they can.
Yeah, and I hope so too. But obviously Dundee coming into this fixture in midweek off the back of a free weekend, but also probably looking to right some wrongs from the last time out when they also faced the same opposition as we did, chucking a 2-1 lead against 10 men Kilmarnock late on. Again, Dundee and late goals, two things going hand in hand this season. Tony Doherty was in attendance at Pittodrie to cast his eye over the Dons, and I'm sure we'll have picked up one or two things from the game. I guess with a trip to Dens, Callum, one thing we know is the pitch is going to be heavy. Or shite, I should say, especially with kind of forecast over the next couple of days to include rain. So potential to have a kind of heavy pitch impact the legs, and squad rotation and utilising the bench may be something that is a factor for Peter Leaven going into this game.
It'll be certainly interesting what sort of lineup or shape even Peter Leaven does go into this game with as well. I think, if I remember correctly, Dundee have got rid of their groundsman, however, and perhaps got a new one in. So hopefully that'll help in the pitch. It's been enough time for the pitch to get in better condition despite the rain. It would be, there's a part of me that's expecting the game not even to go ahead just because of previous this season. But let's hope that's not the case. It'll be interesting to see how we shape up, and I was hoping there'd be a new manager in the stand or a prospective new manager in the stand watching. However, that won't be the case. But off the back of that victory, they've got to take confidence, and I hope Leaving doesn't change all that much from Saturday. Obviously, we'll have the fact it's a midweek game, for the fact the pitch might be heavy to take into account. But I'd be certainly happy for us to go with the same starting 11 as we did against Kilmarnock, against Dundee.
Yeah, no, agree. I'm disappointed there's been no kind of exclusives from Scott Burns or Ryan Krill about who the potential new manager could be, or kind of insights into goings on behind the scenes. For once, things seem to be fairly watertight for news coming out of Pittodrie, which makes a change. I guess with this game coming up as well, in terms of a positive mindset on the back of the weekend's victory, this is an opportunity for us to kind of continue to hang on to Hibs's coattails in the race for top six, for those still on the mindset we could sneak into the top six, given the fact that looking towards the weekend, Dundee face Rangers, we ourselves travel to Motherwell, and Hibs play Livingston. But if there's any team probably could trust less than us, it's Hibs. Hibs, of course, also in action in midweek in their game in hand against Ross County. So, still kind of all to play for. And David McLennan pretty much right here in saying, all things considered, we really need 3 points on Wednesday. Those 3 points on Wednesday would keep that league season interesting, and also dependent on the result from Dingwall, further boost our hopes of survival, or avoiding the playoff, I should probably say.
Yeah. I mean, we need 3 points, whether you're looking up or down the table, essentially. It could be a massive boost. I mean, if we are going to sneak into that top six, Dundee are one of the sides we're going to have to leapfrog. And I don't know, we need to win games between now and the new manager coming in if we are going to have a chance of getting into that top six. And if you do get in the top six, then who knows what could happen from there. But I'm maybe getting a bit carried away given we've won a game. Ultimately, let's not get fucking relegated and just win on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's not like you to ever get carried away on this podcast at all. Dundee, of course, do have the capability within their squad to hurt us. We've seen it, especially at set plays already this season as well. Luke McCowan, certainly a player in their midfield that will look to provide a creative spark. And I think kind of the combination of some of their creative players mixed with the inconsistencies in our defence, I should say, probably mean that this game is going to see goals. Q0-0 now that I've said that. But in terms of an Aberdeen personnel, we've both kind of agreed that we would like to see the same starting 11 that played against Kilmarnock. But if you're Peter Leaven and contemplating any changes, what area of the pitch do you see any changes being made?
Oh, God. I really hope none of them, because the players will be confident that started that game against Kilmarnock. Perhaps maybe brings in Duke for McGrath or Hoylett, you would probably think, but it would feel very, very harsh for any changes, let alone that one, when those two perform particularly well. Mm-hmm. Clarkson, perhaps, for Killian Phillips, but I would prefer Killian Phillips. I think he gives a little bit more bite in there, a little bit more grit rather than Clarkson, for all Clarkson's technical abilities, obviously. Mm-hmm. Or maybe perhaps for Connor Barron, Leighton Clarkson. That's the only places I can really see any potential changes. However, I prefer for there just to be none. Because they were all so good on Saturday. Keep that going. Don't tinker with it. If it's not broken, don't fix it. And it's been very broken this season, but it worked on Saturday. So don't fix it.
Yeah, I would certainly like to see the back four left alone. Just keep them, you know, going as is. McDonald and Gartenman, yes, they made the mistake against St. Johnstone at home and had the mistakes against St. Mirren, but the more they play with each other, the more they get used to each other's game, that will come in time. We're just still making too much changes that's not going to inspire any confidence amongst them. I do agree that you'd probably be looking at the forward areas like Killian Phillips, Junior Hoylett on any potential kind of areas that we see change. And I'm guessing for the likes of Junior Hoyle, it's potentially three games in a week this week coming up. How will a player that's not had many minutes cope with that? Killian Phillips again gives us that physical approach. I thought he was excellent in trying to get us up the pitch from throw-ins. Him and Danny Armstrong seem to have a running battle all weekend on that. He seems like a complete nutter, and I think he'd go absolutely crazy if he scores for Aberdeen as well. But yeah, he just adds that little bit of a, almost like a little bit of a prick to our team, a player that's not afraid to kind of get in the face of the opposition and not care what they think, which is, again, something that this team has massively lacked, not just this season, but over the years as well. So if there was to be a change, I kind of in agreement, probably one or two. I don't see there being wholesale changes. Hopefully, though, we get ourselves in the position come 60, 70 minutes where we can then offload the bench and give players, a little bit of rest ahead of the weekend's game against Motherwell.
Now, that's optimistic. If you thought I was getting carried away, the fact we're going to have things wrapped up by 70 minutes, dearie me, Glenn, are you pissed?
For it then to all collapse in the last 20 minutes and then come on here and there'll be another rant about why the manager shouldn't have changed things and why we should have already had an interim lined up before Peter Leaven took charge. But, of course, Peter Leaven already had one game in charge of the Dons this season, a 1-1 draw against Celtic, so I'm sure he'll be eager to go out and prove that he can continue his unbeaten run as Aberdeen manager.
Imagine he just starts winning every game and just end up with another Robson situation.
I think he's made it abundantly clear to the board that he would rather stay in the background than be the man in charge. So we don't need to worry about that too much. But Callum, it's been good to get you back on the podcast today, despite your technical glitch a little bit earlier on. Just one this week for you because you're working on Thursday evening. So one of Phil Mayer or Jay Moyer will return to the co-host seat on Thursday evening. I know the Maniacs will be desperate to see the return of Phil. So I'll be joined by somebody on Thursday evening to look back at Wednesday night's events at Dens Park and then preview the trip to Fir Park at the weekend. And who knows, maybe have some more chat on the upcoming managerial appointment at Pittodrie as well. So stay tuned for that. Stay tuned to our social media channels as well for some, as we said, some upcoming news regarding the audio and broadcasts of this podcast as well. If you've been watching here on YouTube with us live or on catch up, remember to like the video, subscribe wherever you are tuning in, if it's audio or video. And until next time, thanks very much for joining and commenting along. Sports Social Podcast Network.